It is 25 minutes after the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday. Boy, Don, we were off the air yesterday because of a power outage. Did you have a power outage over in Garden Valley, Texas?
We did not.
Okay.
We did not. No, right. We are part of Wood County Cooperative Co-op, and they're very good at keeping the power on.
Did you have some monster storms come by yesterday?
Not monstrous. Okay. I mean, there was some wind, and we did have rain, which that was actually on Sunday. We had a lot of wind and rain and downpour.
Okay.
But then it tapered off by the afternoon.
All right. Well, I think that's probably part of the same system that got us here in Central Texas. It wasn't all that severe, but it sure knocked out power. We were without electricity until 3:30 yesterday. So it kind of shakes me up when my routine changes. There was no way we could do a live program yesterday, but the music was on. Don Clark is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. He's a biochemist with years in the pharmaceutical industry, and he knows a lot about science, and that's just one of the reasons we love him here at Broken Road Radio. And he lives in Garden Valley, Texas, which is just about 80, 90 miles east of the Dallas area. And he grows wine, and he's putting his pharmaceutical expertise, his biochemistry expertise, into the product of it. Dave and I were just talking about Valle del Pace and Broken Road Radio. Did you realize we were founded in the same year, 2011?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
2011.
And so we've got a common history together over the past 8, 9, 10 years, something like that now. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's neat.
and David is up in East Dakota. So how's global warming working for you up there, David?
Not too well.
No?
I'd like some more. It's 24 degrees right now.
Yeah.
And I could use maybe 20, 30 degrees of global warming. So it should happen tomorrow, but
it could be back and forth. Just kind of seems like you're steeped in ice, and the ice pack in Minnesota hasn't shrunk as far as I can remember. Now it's been 3 or 4 years since I've been up there, but it gets cold in the winter. I remember you know who David Attenborough is, don't you, Don? Tremendous narrator. I mean, I think he's been knighted, as a matter of fact. I think it's Sir David Attenborough.
He's a sir.
I remember a special that he did for the BBC years ago, and it focused on polar bears in the far north. I don't remember specifically the area, but it had a mama polar bear with two cubs that she just gave birth to, and they tumbled out of their snow cave on a hillside, and they showed them cavorting together and mom loving on the, and then it said, but they probably won't make it. They won't probably not make it to adulthood because the ice pack is disappearing and these poor bears can't find food. Mom's going to have to swim for miles and miles and miles and then come back and feed these two kidlings. And well, as it turns out, recent research into these very areas of the Arctic, the ice pack is not bad at all. It's well above the predictions, and the bears are doing just fine, thank you. In fact, they are thriving. Don, what do you make of this? Now, there's a new BBC special with David Attenborough, which is why I bring this up, and again, they're decrying the frozen wilderness disappearing at a faster rate than ever before. Arctic predicted to have ice-free summers by 2035. That seems to be in conflict with the facts, eh?
Well, it must be an NPR series, or did they're fundraising again, huh?
Yeah,
it
could be.
Yes, yeah, so a BBC series, actually, BBC, called the Frozen Planet 2. So, he's tackling this issue again. He's got to keep the propaganda going. And indeed, it's, you know, amount of ice, we'll jump to this study, the other article first, and then we'll come back to the polar bears.
Yeah.
But the amount of ice in the Antarctic is greater than what they anticipated. Matter of fact, it's at a 10-year high, and so the ice isn't disappearing, as David would proclaim that it is. It's staying just fine, and it's pretty stable up there in the Antarctic, so we don't have to worry about the polar bears. But even if the ice wasn't, you know, it was receding because of the this is all hypothesis that carbon dioxide causes temperature rises, and we've talked about this before. It instead of CO2 leading temperature, it looks like temperature from the scientific data actually shows that temperature rises first, and then CO2 increases in the atmosphere following the temperature rise. So the proposition that man-made carbon dioxide is causing the issue is totally incorrect, this whole fear of the ice disappearing in the Antarctic and other places is a problem, and it really isn't a problem, because for example, Greenland, they have a archipelago, which is a little island off of Greenland called Svalbard, I think is the name of it. Dr. Susan Crockford, a zoologist with 40 years experience, has been studying the polar bears. And Svalbard, the thing about it was it lost, it's completely iceless now. And it was, it's a habitation for the polar bears. And the polar bears are thriving without the ice, unexpectedly. So what's the big deal? Do they need the ice?
I see them around lying on the beach, soaking up the rays and sipping Mai Tais now instead of pawing their way through icebergs and looking for seals and stuff.
Well, there's a local Indian group, the Inuits, are complaining to the state. They're saying, these bears are getting too big up here. We got to do something about it.
Well, the thing is, this started
smaller bears
20 years ago with these specials and this whole idea of global warming, and now it's more likely to be called climate change because they had to admit it isn't warming everywhere at the rate we thought. So global change, climate change will cover it for us. But now there's data that's been accumulated over 20, 30 years to prove or disprove the theories, and right now the theories are looking pretty weak.
Very, very weak. And as a matter of fact, there's no correlation, because you would think that the climatologists, who are supposed to be experts in this field, they're developing all these models to model the effect of man's activities on the climate. There's very few, there's one. There was one Russian model that actually pretty much predicted the temperatures rise and falls based on some of man's activities. But all of the other, there's probably 20 or 30 different climate models have absolutely been wrong.
Well, I understand that the methodology for developing a computer model has to do with identifying indices, quantifiable temperatures and water depths and ice depths, and scientists saying, okay, these will be the clues that we look for to see if the climate is changing in one direction or the other. But they select the clues that best indicate global warming and build those into the models, so that those are what the models look for. And they've been making predictions that there will be a dangerous increase in temperature over the years. But the facts, that is the data derived, don't comport with the models. So the models are bad. Is that accurate?
The models, yes. The models are bad because they're assuming that it's man's activities that are affecting the change in temperature. across the globe, and
so there's a bias built into the models.
There is, because that's where the research funds come from. If you can show me that CO2 or other fossil fuel type of end products can cause global warming, then we can do away with fossil fuels. We have an excuse to do away with it, and we'll all convert over to electric vehicles. So the big money is in showing that man's activities, that is the burning of fossil fuels and coal and those type of things, actually affect the climate and the temperatures around the world. And they've been horribly inaccurate in doing it, because that's not the major cause of temperature on Earth. And we've talked about this before, so I'm going to ask a question. What is the major cause of changes in temperature around the globe?
The sun.
Was that a question?
It is a question.
Is it like multiple choice? Do we have multiple choices here?
You have one choice.
Oh. Is there a what's B?
No, there is no B.
There's no B?
Well, actually, there are some things that can cause at least local changes in temperature. For example, if you have several years ago, the Iceland volcano was going off and
yes,
spewing dust into the upper atmospheres, and they had to stop the planes from flying out of Europe because the dust cloud from the volcano was covering Europe, or at least major parts of Europe, and that went on for a month or two or so. The dust blocking the sun would then lower the temperature in those regions. Wow. I don't think anybody in their right mind would say, well, a volcano going off is man's caused by man's activities. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So there are natural processes that happen here on Earth that can affect the temperature. And as a matter of fact, it has in the past, because the ice ages are very well explained by all the volcanic activity that was going on after the flood, as the continents were breaking apart and drifting apart. You would expect tremendous amount of volcanic activity at that time, and indeed we have evidence that that was indeed the case. But back to our little polar bears, our polar bears are thriving, and even when the ice was melting in the Antarctic at its seemingly a faster rate, guess what was happening? I mean, at the Arctic, guess what was happening at the Antarctic? The same year that ice was the polar ice caps were melting a little more than they typically did, the same years, ice was increasing at the Antarctic, and so the net was not a the net was there was no net change in total ice. Because at one pole it was decreasing, at the other pole it was increasing. But they don't say anything about that.
You know, we've talked a number of times over the years, in fact, about the systems built into the Earth itself that helps it defend itself against excess. It always seems to return to balance. I remember talking with you about these currents, and speaking of the Antarctic, that pull CO2 out of the atmosphere and submerge it into the ocean, where it's converted into what, another gas or another chemical of some kind. So it's kind of a self-protection mechanism. Those exist all around the Earth.
Yeah, calcium carbonate. Mm-hmm. Primarily it's calcite. And so you get an increase in deposits of calcite. So we do, God designed into the Earth into our environment, these checks and balances, so that when increases in one area go, you know, happens, there will be a counterbalance to that. So we get a fairly stable environment in which to live, which is great because we can grow crops and we can at least predict that we're going to have the ability to grow crops next year because the climate's going to be about the same. But the net effect is that climate does change. I mean, we do have seasons, for example, and the further away you get from the equator, the more seasons you might have, in the greater the swings in the temperature, for example. But you know, it all balances out in the end. And so these things that people want to point to and say, you see, that's the effect of climate change. And you know, I want to make sure that people understand when the folks say climate change, they're using that term to mean that man's activities actually affect the climate. And so we've got to do something right now about man's activities, like shutting down any production of fossil fuels or any use of coal, although 80% of our electricity comes from coal-fired plants here in the United States, and we just want to shut it down right now, saying that, hey, you got to replace, if you want to stop burning coal, you have to replace it with something, and you can't build, there isn't enough land, usable land, to put wind power generators around the country, and there's all kinds of problems with wind power. For example, they have to change out the generators almost on an annual basis. Wow. And the cost of that is astronomical, not to mention the amount of, guess what, fossil fuels that they have to burn in order to change out the generators. So you're not saving a single thing by putting up wind generators to replace fossil fuels, because you've got to burn fossil fuels, that is diesel. You know, you have diesel engines and these big cranes that you have to employ in order to take the generator out of one of these things and put another generator in. Plus transporting these big generators across the country.
You know, I saw a great cartoon yesterday, and it was a tribute to the Ford F-150 pickup truck, the new electronic vehicle version of it. Because now, without the engine up front, there's enough room to carry the generator you'll need to recharge the batteries, the gasoline-powered generator.
It kind of
illustrates the point here. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, we gotta rethink this, because this, you gotta look at the whole picture, and that's what they don't want you to do, because there's big bucks in converting over to all of this electric vehicles, and most of the big bucks are not necessarily going to flow into American companies. They're going to go over to the Chinese companies, into China, because they have the lithium and they have the, you know, they can manufacture these batteries because they don't care about the environment. And so all the environmental restrictions that we have here, for example, mining all the tons and tons of dirt that must be dug up.
Rare earth metals,
in order to get the rare earth metals. Mm-hmm. We don't allow that here, and so it's got to be done in other countries. And so, you know, China has no problem doing that. Matter of fact, China, if you look at all of this global, climate change and fossil fuel burning, China and India are the two countries that are increasing their burning of coal, for example, for their coal-fired electric power plants. So everybody else in the world is shutting down or trying to shut down their coal-fired plants. India and China are building more of them because, guess what? There's going to be a surplus of coal And so why not use a lower cost energy source to power your growing cities than, you know, try and, you know, that technology is so old. I mean, you're basically just boiling water by heating it up in a coal-fired plant, and they probably don't even put the scrubbers on the smokestacks that we do here. So we're having a net increase in coal burning, not a net decrease, and the coal that's being burned is not clean coal. It's going to be the cheap, dirty type of coal. So overall, the environment's being more polluted by the activities of
India and China. With all that, the polar bears are thriving. The polar ice is doing just fine, thank you. But there's another area where climate change people have predicted tragedy and catastrophe, and that's in terms of storms roaring across the Atlantic and striking the U.S., and they predicted more hurricanes, stronger hurricanes. That hasn't happened. It was supposed to be going on right now, but there was Hurricane Ian that did horrific damage crossing Florida. And a minute ago, we were talking about the Earth's ability to heal its wounds from whatever happens. That was apparent in Florida as well, correct?
Yes, indeed. So we have this hurricane then that comes across Florida, and of course, you know, it pretty much shut down all the power and all the electricity in Cuba before it hit Florida. So I'm hoping that they have now gotten their power at least partially back on.
You have ministry connections in Cuba, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, and so so you have this one hurricane. Now, mind you, it's only one hurricane. You know, right. By this time, you know, usually we've had four or five hurricanes, but this year we've had Ian. And there's been some others, but, you know, they haven't done a whole lot of damage. So it's not like the number of hurricanes are increasing or have been changing over the years. And indeed, that isn't the case whatsoever. Now, Ian was so destructive because, well, the Gulf, you know, the Gulf waters were warm. And so whenever you have, in which they always are during the summer, but if they get a little bit warmer, then you might have a more powerful hurricane, because the hurricane will then suck up the heat from the water, and that's what generates the power within the hurricane. So you get, you know, in this case, a class 5 hurricane, which is a very, very powerful hurricane. Which dissipates when it starts hitting land. It dissipates the energy in that storm system, dissipates pretty quickly. So the brunt of the hurricane can cause a lot of damage, but as it goes across land, it will start to diminish very quickly. Now, you might have recall there was another hurricane that came across Florida not that many years ago, and it was Michael, the storm that hit northern, more northerly part, and that caused tremendous damage. And they're still kind of recovering from that. And there's all kinds of hurricanes that happen, both you know, on the Atlantic side and on the Gulf side, and this is not anything unusual. And a matter of fact, there used to be terms. You remember the terms like El Nino?
Mm-hmm. Had to do with the water temperature in the Pacific,
So the temperature in the ocean, especially Pacific Ocean and the Gulf, when it gets a little warmer, they call it an El Nino. And so you don't hear that term anymore. Well, we're having an El Nino, you know, so the temperatures are warmer. But that's, again, due to the normal cycles of the energy output from the sun that is creating these warmer temperatures. And so we should expect then that we're going to have maybe, you know, some drastic swings in temperatures as a result of it, as we usually do. But is it caused from man's activity? Absolutely not.
Well, there's been concern about some of the damage to the seashore and the river outlets across Florida done by this storm, and they're decrying, well, I would submit that there's more destruction than ever because there's more to destroy than ever in terms of man's buildings and streets and infrastructure. It makes these storms even worse than they would have been 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And now they're record setters for destruction. They just didn't have that many people, that many buildings, that many cars and resorts and seashore homes in the old days. So obviously the destruction wasn't the same, but the damage to the seashore was the same. And the earth has a way of healing itself, doesn't it? Those old scars from those old storms are long gone.
Exactly. And just as, you know, the little inlets that have been, or maybe even big inlets that were produced by Ian, those will be healed over the, you know, coming years, and the beach will go back to where it was before. And so the... You know, all of this just the currents in the area, you know, just keep washing up more and more sand, and that was washed away, you know, winds up coming back, and you know, some places along the coast, especially the southern coast, they've put up different barriers to try to stabilize the beach in their area because they've got homes and buildings and things that they don't want washing out to the sea. But this is normal beach life. There's nothing unusual about that. And that's what you have to put up with if you're going to build your house close to the, close to the ocean. You're going to have to put up with, today you have a beach and tomorrow you may not type of thing. And but that's been happening, for a long, long, long time. This is nothing new.
Is it the first law of thermodynamics? Is it? I don't know if that's the right name for it, but for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. It's just that sometimes that equal and opposite reaction takes a little time because there's something happening on a different time scale than what we see in the generations and human life cycles. Longer cycles that the Earth uses to repair itself and undo the damage that, in most cases, we haven't done as humans.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And, there are, like I said, there are things that we can do to help stabilize, but our efforts are minuscule compared to what nature itself, even the Corps of Engineers can try to build up pumping stations and various barricades along the way. But, when a hurricane comes, it comes, and it's going to do its thing, regardless of
that are out of our hands, and that's the fact of life. The other fact is that those things are in good hands. You know, things are taking care of themselves just the way they were designed to do. Don Clark, a biochemist, again, a member of the board at Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you. Creationmoments.com is the website, and there you'll find lots of scientific information about the biblical story of creation, among other things. It's a good place to visit, creationmoments.com. Don, we appreciate the information you brought us, and we'll be back with you next week and look forward to that. Okay?
All righty. Yeah. Very good.
Have a good
one. See you then.
Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
Bye.
Thanks much.